I have started the recorder now. And so we are going to be looking at NTI 2 Corinthians chapter 3, which in my Kindle is on page 310. What do you guys have in the paper book? 311 in the paper book. NTI 2 Corinthians chapter 3. Evidence is sought within the world. You look at the world, and you seek evidence that what I say is true. But if you look at the world with the thought that what I say may not be true, that is the evidence you will find. For the world was written as an experience of untruth. And so the world can be used to prove that the untrue is true, if that is the evidence the mind seeks. It's interesting because the last thing I did before cooking dinner tonight was listen to an audio of myself, but it's for the ministerial program because I do the homework along with you guys. I don't know if you knew that. So I was listening to the audio where I was talking about how there was a time when I wanted to find an enlightened person and get to know them. But the reason I wanted to find an enlightened person, and I didn't know this at the time, it was unconscious. The reason I wanted to find an enlightened person is because I really didn't believe that the truth was true. And I wanted to find evidence in the world that it was. And of course, since that was my underlying cause, all that happened with this particular teacher was, you know, all I saw was that there was no truth there. It was just a big disappointment. I don't know how else to say that. It was a big disappointment. And what I didn't know, you know, of course I was in pain too when he didn't turn out to be, the voice of the Holy Spirit in form, right? I was in pain. And what I didn't know was the problem that was in my mind that was causing this whole situation. And that problem was that really I believed that the truth was not true. And I was trying to find something in the world to convince me that it was. But the hidden thought underneath that is that it's not. And so if the hidden thought is it's not true, that's the evidence that's going to keep showing up. You can't look for proof of truth and find proof of truth. Realization of truth comes from resting and being. That's how realization of truth comes, from resting and being. And that's why, you know, one thing that we do is, we, you know, A Course in Miracles says that, love itself cannot be taught. But what we are to do is to seek out and find all of the obstacles to love's presence and let them go. Well, if you look at any of the obstacles to love's presence that you have found up until today, notice that every one of those obstacles were in the way of you resting and being. So to go into the world looking for some kind of proof that the truth is true, That's just not going to work, and the world is going to prove to you. I don't know how many enlightened teachers you can find that are going to disappoint you. I mean, I'm sure there are hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds out there. You know, so you could spend your whole life chasing after enlightened teacher after enlightened teacher after enlightened teacher, trying to find the one that will finally prove to you that truth is true. And you can waste your entire life doing that when the truth was right here with you the whole time. Kind of reminds me of a story. When I was a little girl, I was a bluebird. Have you guys heard of the bluebirds? Yeah, some areas have brownies and Girl Scouts, and some have... Yeah, some areas have brownies and Girl Scouts, and other towns have bluebirds, and then the big ones are campfire girls. So I was a bluebird, and one of our key stories as bluebirds was about these two little kids that were looking for the bluebird of happiness. And I don't remember the whole story, but they ran all over the world. They heard the bluebird was there, and they went there, and they couldn't find it. And they went there, and they went all the way around the world. And, of course, when they came home, the bluebird of happiness was in their backyard. Yeah. You know, so that's really trying to tell us that, you know, that the truth is right here. And all of my searching, looking for this enlightened person that can prove to me that it's real, this enlightened person that lives up to my fantasy of what an enlightened person should look like if it's real, that's just distracting me from where it's at. That's my running around the world looking for the bluebird of happiness. The truth is, none of us really have to go anywhere. You know, we may be guided to from time to time. You know, it happens. But we don't have to go anywhere to find the truth, because it's always where we are. And yes, Tom, please.
Just reflecting on what I was saying before, and that whenever I feel an agitation that it seems to be outside of myself, that's why it's always, I'm the one that's in need of love, you know. I'm always the one looking out. So if I have this deception that I'm not enough or whatever, then I'm always going to be looking out.
Yes.
That's always what I'm going to be seeing. So I always need to love myself first. And that's kind of like what NTI goes into. You know, the course is all about love your brother, love your brother, love your brother.
Yes.
I find you can't do that. You can't do that until you have a true love for your own self.
Well, you know, I kind of made this joke up, but it might even be true. But the joke that I made up was that A Course in Miracles is for extroverts and NTI is for introverts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, because NTI is all about being alone and looking within. And A Course in Miracles is all about being with your brother and looking out and seeing them differently. And both paths work. But, you know, but I think some people like Lynn Johnson, who's not here, but Lynn is she's a people lover person. She just loves people. The more people, the better. And A Course in Miracles is magnificent for her. You know, where I'm definitely an introvert, you know, I like to be with one or two people, mostly alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're an introvert. So for some of us, NTI is definitely, it's just more suited to our style, you could say. Our temperament, yes, more suited to our temperament.
And it's a lot less pages.
That's right. That's cool. But for those in the recording who did not hear Jason, he said, and it's a lot less pages. Yeah, there'll be a lot of people listening to this recording tomorrow, so I wanted them to hear your witty remark, because you are right. When I started studying A Course in Miracles, I read the manual for teachers first because it was a lot less pages. So I get that.
Yeah. I just wanted to say,
it's always inside. Yeah. All right, so let's look at verses 5 to 11. To forgive a circumstance or event is not to separate... Oops, I'm reading the wrong page. Forgive me. Let me. Yeah, sorry, we're starting with sentence 6. My mind turned back a page on how we were talking. We're starting with sentence 6, right? Mm-hmm. I ask you to... Oh, here we go, introverts. You'll like this. Mm-hmm. I ask you to not look at the world. I ask you to look in your heart and see what you find there. Your truth is written on your heart, and by seeking there, not in the world, you will find confirmation that all I say is true. So you can see how that's really perfect for an introverted type of person who spends time in contemplation, spends time in meditation, maybe walking among nature but being focused in. You know, this is saying if you go in, you know, which is actually quite natural for you introverts, if you go in, you're going to find the truth right there. And in fact, Dave, I think you talked about this not too long ago. It seems like I remember it coming from you. You talked about how, you know, every time that you have found love or felt love, it was right. It was really right here. Or was that you, Tom? Or was it both of you?
It sounds like something either one of us could have
said. Yeah.
So yes.
Somebody with a beard and glasses said it. I don't know who it was. Okay. So, sentence 10. For you do know the truth when you hear it, You know it because it is written on your heart. It is written on your heart because it is you. So again, when we read NTI or when we read anything else and we read something that we know is true, how do we know that? You know, I mean, we're reading it for the first time in many cases, but we know that it's true. How do we know that? We know that because that's our own knowledge. We're just seeing it reflected to us on a page, or we're hearing it reflected to us from a teacher. But the recognition of it is here, right? We recognize the truth because it's our truth. We don't really have to learn the truth. We recognize the truth is what happens. Verses 7 to 11. You were taught to look at the world by a desire to know the untrue as true. This is the evidence that the world is, and this is what you learn when you look at the world and believe it as evidence. But now I ask you to look in a new place for evidence. I ask you to look not at the world for proof of what is true, but to look within yourself, where the truth about you is known. The world was made to tell you that you are what you are not. But this is a lesson you can never fully learn, because the truth of what you are is written on your heart. Seek there. Ask your heart what you are, and the answer will be given clearly. Then look at the world, which gives you a different answer, and say to it, I will believe the answer of the heart. I will let that answer shine unto you. Okay, see if I can pull into my memory. One of the things I did today, one of my tasks, I have to post on the Awakening Together website the daily quotes. We have daily quotes that come every day that we contemplate together, and I have to post those. So what I do is I post a whole big group at a time. And one of the posts I posted today, I can't fully remember it. I think it's coming. It was by Sri Chinmoy. And what the post talked about was, it talked about remembering God before I remember myself, looking at God before I look at myself, something like that. And that's the same thing this is saying. If I look at myself, this person's self, if I look at myself first, I'm going to see my worries, my concerns, things that need to be fixed, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But if I take time to look at God first within, and then I look at myself, I'm not going to see those things. So it's a matter of which one do you look at first? Do you look at your heart and then look at the world, or do you just look at the world? Marianne Williamson was the speaker at the CMC conference 2 years ago in San Francisco. And she talked about how for a number of years she used to get up in the morning, watch the news, and then run out into the world doing her busy schedule. And basically she talked about what a bitch she was. And at some point it hit her that she needed to change her morning routine. So she changed her morning routine so that instead of watching the news, she would spend her morning in contemplation and then go out into the same world, right, with the same busy schedule. And everything was different. You know, everything was different. So that's what this is talking about. You need to look within, look at your heart first. Always go there first, then look out. And then it's like you're looking out through the lens of your heart. But if you skip that time of going within first and you just keep rushing into the world, the first day it may not affect you. You know, if you had been on a good schedule of contemplation, the second day it may not affect you. But if you keep it up, you're going to start noticing that you've lost something. It's going to feel like you've lost something. You've lost your peace. You're going to be more on edge. You're going to be feeling more stress. And the reason is because you stopped the focus of looking at God first. Yes, sir.
I really love that. And I would let that answer shine unto you. Because wherever you're looking, if I'm looking at the false self first, that's what's creating the world. If I look at my heart, then that's what's creating my world. So that's, it goes right through, you know, I'm creating the world at any given time. It's just a matter of what I'm creating it through.
Yeah. All right, so starting with sentence 7, by listening to the heart and following its truth within the world, you become a symbol that the world is not Lord. Your symbol is a message into the mind that sings, look into the heart. I told Danielle earlier today that a shift had occurred in me, and I didn't know what that shift was exactly, but I think now I do know. Those of you who live here in Pueblo, you know this year has been like the busiest year, you know, since I quit my job at PHCS in 2004. You know, this has been like the busiest year for me. And during the first part of the year, because I felt like I had so much to do, so I would wake up and I guess very quickly I was looking at the world only in my mind, but I was looking at all the things I needed to do. And what I was doing was jumping into the doing. Because I had so much to do, I needed to do first. I needed to do, or I was never going to get it done. And what happened for me as this year has progressed, in the beginning part of the year, is stress was returning. Stress like I used to have in my old professional job. You know, I felt like I lost something. I felt like I had lost my connection. You know, when I taught, I could still be as clear as always. And I didn't turn back into who I was, because I really did. I used to be a bitch, too. Marianne Williamson wasn't the only one. And I didn't turn back into that. But there was just this edge of stress that was always there. I don't know exactly when, but at some point I realized I needed to add the contemplation back into my life. And I think I cheated a little bit by adding contemplation for the whole world. I think that's the real purpose of the daily quotes. Like, I sucked all you guys into my, I need to start contemplating again. And and I started getting up, and I don't always contemplate right away first, because some mornings I have like prayer circle, but still that's pretty inward focused. You know, sometimes I have those early morning things I got to do on Pow Talk, but I do take time for contemplation now every day. And so now, and I remember I told you guys this a couple weeks ago too, I'm just as busy as I ever was. It has not changed one iota, but I feel free, I feel at peace, I don't feel burdened. I just go from one thing to the next. I'm focused on what I'm on. I'm not thinking about the other things that are waiting. Like, in one way, it hasn't changed at all. I mean, I'm just as busy. And in the other way, it's changed completely. And what's the only thing that's changed is I've started looking at God first in the morning. I take that contemplation time, you know, and then I move out into the world. And it's changed everything.
When my alarm clock goes off, it's a race for me to get to God before my ego gets to me.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that for the recording. Dan said that when his alarm clock goes off in the morning, it's a race for him to get to God before his ego gets to him.
Nailed it.
Yeah, that was good.
I found a big difference too. Before we just moved here 2 weeks ago, and I used to spend a lot of time in silence, like probably an hour in the morning, usually. But then little by little, as we were selling the house, and the house had to look good, and then moving, it was such a big job and everything that I ended up totally stopping. And I just wasn't at the same place.
Right.
I totally lost the inner focus. Yeah, and it just wasn't fun at all. Getting back into it now.
Yeah.
It's important.
It is important, absolutely.
Don't forget to laugh.
All right, so sentence 9. In this way, but he's talking about looking into the heart. In this way, your message is clear and it is consistent. For when the mind looks to the heart for guidance, it will find only the guidance of the heart. The guidance of the heart is one because the message of the heart is one. You are love. And anything that is not love must only be an illusion of what you are. Look not upon illusions that you are not fooled. Look upon thy heart and know thyself truly. So it's really funny because although to some degree our house is always clean, this year I've had trouble. I felt like I've had trouble finding the time to clean the house because I was so busy. Now I'm just as busy as ever, and I just took 2 whole days to really clean the house. You know, like my mom used to call spring cleaning, you know, to really, really clean the house. There was no stress about what I wasn't doing. There was absolute joy in cleaning the house. Now I'm right back to the work, you know, and the work waited for me. And you know, I mean, you know, it's so funny because I know for a fact that 2 months ago, if not a month ago, I would have hated the fact that the house needed to be clean, but no way felt that I could do it, felt that I needed to be working, and there would have been this stress and this driving feeling. And nothing has changed. And I'm able to do everything. In fact, that was another one of our quotes. That was one of our quotes a couple days ago that, does anybody remember it? It was something about, when you do nothing, everything gets done. I remember those lines. Now, I think that was from Lao Tzu.
Yeah, it's from
the
Tao, right?
Yeah. When you do nothing, everything gets done. And somehow, even though obviously this body is still doing something, there's a resting, there's a relaxing, there's a non-attachment that's happening. So you could say at the same time, I'm doing nothing. Where before I had all this stress, I was thinking about all these things, and I had to get everything straight, and I had to get back to so-and-so, and I couldn't forget that, and you know? And all of that is gone now. And the only change that I made in my life was I returned to contemplation in the morning, even though it appeared I didn't have time to. All right, NTI, 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Belief in the world is the veil of darkness. But this veil was not placed there by one greater than you. This veil is not an obstacle that cannot be lifted through your own desire. This veil was placed over truth through your own desire to see apart from truth. Therefore, the veil is lifted through your desire to lay down untruth and to see through the vision of truth again. One of the things that's also been coming clearer to me through my contemplation lately, one of the focuses of my personal contemplation is really looking at desire. And, you know, we've gone within, we meaning me and my inner guide, we've gone within and I've looked at the energy of desire. And I've looked at how the I thought and the energy of desire attach to one another, and they become like a glue that keeps you focused on the world, believing your thoughts. When a thought comes up and you follow that thought and you start believing that whole story, it's because your I thought and some desire connected and made a glue, and that's what makes that story stick to you. And, you know, it could be any kind of a desire. It could, you know, obviously a desire for more money, a desire for more free time, a desire for more friends, a desire for more space, a desire for more health, you know, you name it. But if you have a desire for something, and then that I thought comes in, and that I thought and that desire hooked together, you've got like glue, and this is what makes those stories kind of appear to stick, where you can't shake them off, right? They keep coming back. So there's really only 2 ways to break that glue. You let go of the I thought, or you let go of desire, right? If you let go of either one, the glue is broken. And we all know the Buddha really taught a lot about letting go of desire. I mean, I think so. You were the Buddhist in the family. Didn't Buddha teach a lot about letting go of desire? Correct. You know, and Ramana teaches a lot about letting go of the I thought.
And sometimes when people look at teachings like that, they'll say, well, you know, Ramana hardly ever talks about desire. I never heard Buddha talk about the I thought. They're not the same thing. But you let go of either aspect of the glue, and you're free. And so one thing that NTI teaches, also A Course in Miracles says that everything that the ego made, the Holy Spirit uses. Or it actually says the Holy Spirit uses everything the ego made. And it was the ego that made desire. Or desire is the ego. You could even say it that way, to be honest. So Holy Spirit uses desire to help weaken and then finally break that glue. And what Holy Spirit asks us to do is to have a new desire, a corrective desire. That is the true desire, the desire to know thyself, the desire to know truth, the desire to be only love, right? And if you focus all of your attention on that desire, what happens is your other desires begin to grow weaker. And as your other desires grow weaker, that glue that keeps all of those stories running in your mind, they become less and less valuable to you, less and less meaningful to you. You're no longer as interested in them as you were before, because now you're interested in your true desire.
I was just going to say also, I like the way it's put, therefore the veil is lifted through your desire to lay down untruth. For me, I've got a thing with words, and like when I say, I don't want this, that's not the way the universe works to me.
Yes.
You know, it's focus of attention. If I'm saying I don't want this, it's still focusing, you know, and I remember this from drinking. I don't want to drink, I don't want to drink. You know, it's just focused on the drinking, you know.
Yeah.
So for me, it's to create the new desire, you know, to have a new desire.
Something else to focus on.
To focus on instead of having an undesire.
Right.
You know.
Right. This is how death and the resurrection are to be acted out through you. The truth cannot die, so the truth need not be resurrected. The truth simply is, and it is always is, without beginning and without end. What is it then that must die? What is there to be resurrected? Your belief in illusion must die, so that your awareness of what is may be resurrected through you. Your belief is expressed through thought. Above all else, watch your thoughts. What are you allowing your thoughts to think? Are you thinking of the illusion of the world as if it is real? If so, you are expressing your desire to accept the veil of darkness. Is this your true desire? If not, why do you permit yourself to express it through the activity of your thoughts? Now again, never forget that NTI was written for me. Okay, so please don't ever forget that. But what Holy Spirit was saying to me was, you know, on the one hand, you say that you want to awaken. And on the other hand, today, you spent the vast majority of the day thinking about how you were running out of money. Notice that you say you want to awaken, but what you must really want is, you know, money. Because that's what you spent all day thinking about. And he's just pointing this out. It's just like shining a light on it. And, you know, even though the words, for some people, the words sound a little firm, for me, all those words did was get my attention. I never, ever, ever felt attacked by Holy Spirit. But I totally got this point. You know, if I really want God, then wouldn't my mind be with God all day? Right? I mean, don't you think about what you want? And so, you know, like when you're falling in love with a new girl or a new guy, aren't you thinking about him all the time, right? So if I want God, but I notice at another level I really don't want God because I want money, what I need to do is bring that truer want more into my consciousness.
And the way that this paragraph taught me to do that is, again, in a very non-judgmental way. I was always taught not to judge myself. But when I noticed that my mind was thinking about money again, say, wait a minute, is this what I really want? And then I could, even just now saying, I could feel it in my heart. I always could feel it in my heart. No, that's not what I want. What I really want is to awaken. And it's like a shift would occur. A shift would occur from what I would call the wants at the head level to the want at the heart level. And when the shift occurred, I was totally free of those thoughts about money for as long as I stayed here, because now money was literally unimportant. The only thing that was important was God. And then if later, you know, that drifted back up to here, when I'm thinking about money again or, you know, whatever I'm thinking about, as soon as I notice, I would just say, wait a minute, is this what I really want? And then I'd feel it. Ah, no, 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 this is what I want. And I would go back. And so that was a practice that Holy Spirit gave me. And that practice for me has always been what I call it my true north. Because whenever I start getting distracted, thinking I want something else, literally, all I have to do is ask this question, and I can drop that something else quite simply, and I'm right back here. Right? So just by keeping in my mind as well, you know, taking my heart's desire, but keeping it in my mind too, it keeps me in harmony with my heart. And then, literally, the rest of the world and the rest of my life can go in any direction that it's going to go in, when all I want is awakening at that heart level, not at the head level. So we're talking about, it's a shift that occurs. It's not a mental, attacking of another desire. You know what I mean? I think you guys know what I mean. Okay, good. So sentence 8. Watch your thoughts. Ask them to express your true desire. Your thoughts must do as you ask, because you are the thinker of your thoughts. Let them express your true desire. If they do not, let them go. So, you know, again, so this would be like, okay, so instead of thinking about money, I want to think about God. How can I think about God now? And then, you know, some, maybe in the early phases, a line from A Course in Miracles would come into my mind. Later, I had those single quiet thoughts I was carrying in my pocket. I would pull it out. But something would come to replace the thoughts that were there first. Something that was focused toward awakening, right? In the beginning, they were word thoughts. I would say now, they're not even word thoughts anymore. Now they're wordless. It's a perspective shift that just comes into the mind and then kind of stays. It's a perspective of peace, joy, trust, not wanting anything to be different than it is. It's like a whole, I would call it God attitude. There's a God attitude that shows up if I ask now. And then I can just be in that God attitude. Used to it was something that was still a little more mental, probably because I was still attached to the mental a little more. So it might be like for a while there was the mantra, I am that I am, or a line from, and I could repeat that mental thing. Now it's more just like a God attitude that just comes, and I just be in that, right? But something comes either way, whether it's wordless or with words. Something comes to replace what was happening before. Verses 16 to 18. Fix your eyes and your thoughts on the true desire of your heart, not because it is your hope for the future, but because it is your reality now. You are what your heart tells you that you are, only you do not see it because you do not focus yourself there. This took me forever to get, and I don't know why, but whenever people would talk about, you know, you are that now, it's something we say, no, not yet, you know, not yet, but I will be, you know, like I had, I don't know, like it was a self-improvement project, I guess, you know, someday I'll be good enough to be that, but right now I'm not, you know. It really wasn't until the teachings of Inner Ramana came, and the very, very end of the teachings of Inner Ramana, where he taught the three stages of mind, which I know I've told you guys about before, but I'll tell you again. He taught about the resistor, the doubter, and abiding. And he said that the resistor is like the average person in the world today. The resistor is actually the person who thinks they know who they are. You know, hi, I'm Regina, I'm from Kansas, you know, I like this and this and this, and I don't like that and that and that, and you know, that's the resistor, because the person who really thinks of themselves wholly as a person is resisting their truth completely. The doubter is an in-between phase, it's like a bridge. The doubter is when you're beginning to listen to truth. You could be listening to it from within, you could be listening to it by reading a book or by listening to a teacher. Of course, you're recognizing it. But you still perceive yourself as the person who's learning the truth. You don't perceive that truth as you, right? So you're still doubting who you are. You're not resisting it as much, but you're doubting it as you're beginning to recognize it. Abiding is when you realize you are that truth, and so you just decide to start being it, just being it. And what Inner Ramana told me was that I had had a very healthy doubter phase. And what I knew when I heard that, well, I mean, if you look, all of NTI was written from within. All of the messages with Laurent were written from within. All of Inner Ramana was written within. Obviously, I could hear this stuff. So all I had to do was let go of thinking I had to sit down in a chair and ask some imaginary other to provide the information. I just had to realize it was always right here, and all I had to do was that pause and check and know and then be, right? That's abiding. And it was at that point when I laid down the idea of an other forever. From then on, I've always called it inner wisdom. You know, and when I talk about NTI, I may say Holy Spirit. When I talk about Course in Miracles, I may say Jesus. When I talk about Inner Ramana, I may say Ramana, but that's just expression. What I realize now is that wisdom is always here now, always. All I have to do is be in harmony with it, be tuned into it. I can still forget it if I want to, but I don't have to. So I can be it. So let's see, what was I reading here?
You're up to four.
Yep, focus on the, well, let me read the last paragraph again. Fix your eyes and your thoughts on the true desire of your heart, not because it is your hope for the future. Oh yeah, I was talking about, I thought someday I'll be that, right? But because it is your reality now. Right now, every one of us has the ability to tune into wisdom and be it. We have that ability. If we're not doing it yet, it's because our doubting mind is still too strong, or our attachment to the false self is still too strong. But that ability is still there. We don't have to gain that ability. And so the only thing that really causes you to shift, which this chapter is talking about, is your desire. Which do you desire more? And one of the things that you can do is you can focus on your true desire and make it stronger. You know, spend time having gratitude for your true desire. Spend time realizing how helpful your true desire is. Spend time noticing how this really is your true desire. Spend more time with inspirational books. More time in meditation or contemplation, whichever, you know, inspires you the most. Or walking, if you walk with God. And let this desire bloom and bloom and bloom. Because when this desire blooms enough, at some point you aren't going to be as interested in being that false self. You aren't going to be as interested as coming from your other desires and snapping at people and getting it. It's just not going to be appealing to you because it's not what you want anymore. Yes?
This is something I just got. You know, for me, when we talk about, you know, I hear how the way it works for you,
yes,
the way that you're able to see a thought and
yes,
recognize it and dismiss it, and that's, you know, for
yes,
me, you know, Jesus says, where your heart is, there you will find your treasure.
There your treasure lies, yes.
There your treasure lies. I could feel the false self in my heart. I can. When somebody's got a broken heart, the true self doesn't have a broken heart. But when somebody dies, you know, you feel it in your heart. Or if you're fearful or whatever, you feel it in your heart. For me, that's, you know, I have. That's why it feels like it's got such power and such life. It's not something that, you know, I can't. You know, when I listen to you, I'm like, man. And then I come try to do it, and I, you know, it's just like, when something comes to me, something false, it's here. I feel it right
yes.
here. And it's so hard to let go. It's not like, I'm going to choose this. You know, this thing's got some gravity. It's got some power. You know?
Yeah.
And it's because it's powered by the heart. You know, ego's no dummy. If I was going to make my home, I wouldn't make it in the mind, because if it was cerebral, it would be a lot easier to get rid of. It's going to camp out right here and make itself seem as real as possible, as real as real can possibly appear to be. You know, so it always feels like it's like this really just deep reckoning and just like, fuck, you know? And it's just like, it's much more than
Can you give me a specific story example that you're willing to share?
I guess with attachments, one of my most specific ones is having a jealousy issue between
yes.
me and Jacqueline. Right? Now, there's this part of me that says, that has this clear recognition, that cannot be who I am. That cannot be the truth of who I am. There's no way. When I understand what created the universe, what keeps my heart beating, what keeps the blood flowing through my brain, my veins, and keeps my breath, that cannot be the power
yeah.
that I'm thinking I am right now. This connection to a jealous little stupid little bullshit thing, you know, and. But there's such a, and it's not the jealousy thing so much, it's this tremendous identity. It's like, that's mine, don't impinge on my, you know, it's like, you know, like I remember in the Old Testament, you will be upheld before men. They used to pray to God, and God used to tell them, you will be upheld before men. Like, that was the big thing, you know, and so, I always feel like if there's a jealousy thing going on, it's like somebody thinks I'm a dupe, you know, and that they can get over on me, you know, and Jacqueline's playing into it, you know, and now I feel just like really shrunk up like this, you know, I feel like so minimized, and...
Okay, so what's the real problem?
The real problem is I have this clear recognition of this. And it's still, I still have this.
But what's the real problem? I want to hear you say it. What's
the real problem?
You just told me. I don't know if you heard yourself. What's the real problem of your jealousy? What's the root cause of your jealousy?
I don't know who I am.
That's not what you just said.
The root cause of the jealousy.
Esther, gonna play it back.
Well, I think it's...
The root cause of your jealousy is that you're fearful that you're little, that you're nothing, that you're insignificant, and you don't
right.
want anybody proving that to you.
Right.
That's the real cause of your jealousy.
Yeah.
You're having thoughts. You're just not looking at them.
Well, you know, to me, it's like I'm still kind of like focused on, I'm like, this, even when it's going on, I'm like, this cannot be the truth of who I am. And I know that. I know that so powerfully, and it still has a grip.
Yeah, but it still has a grip because you haven't looked at it yet. You know, so what's happening is your mind is telling you, I'm not having thoughts, I can't look at thoughts, it's not like that for me, and somehow the thoughts are sliding by without being seen. It's a very normal thought that you're having. Everybody has it in one form or the other, and it manifests in everybody in one form or the other. And that thought is simply that you are the most insignificant person on this planet. That's your thought.
I mean, just now when you were telling the story about someone taking Jacqueline away, you didn't tell a story about how you'd be lonely, how much you'd love her, how much you told us. You just sat here and told me a story about how they're pulling something off on you. They're making you feel, that's what you talked about. It didn't even have anything to do with Jacqueline. And every single person in this room until this healed thinks that they're the most insignificant person on this planet. That's the most common belief in the world. And the only way to heal that most common belief in the world is to be aware of it. Not believe that it's anything else. You just say, oh, there it is again. There's that thought again that I'm the most insignificant person. Look at me, I'm really pissed off and jealous. But why am I really pissed off and jealous? I'm really pissed off and jealous because I'm going to look like a dupe. They're all going to see what a loser I am. I don't even want to look at it. You know, I don't want to see what a loser. And the truth is, that's the primary belief of the ego. So this is what I mean by watching thoughts. But first you have to find the thoughts. And lots of people have tried telling me, I don't have thoughts. And I'm like, that's not true. That's never true. There's always thoughts there, but the thoughts sometimes sneak by so quickly, or we're not looking at it, we're still looking at the surface story. But there's always a thought. And the way that you heal those beliefs, because that's a belief, you know, which a belief is nothing but a thought that's been reinforced and reinforced and reinforced. It's still just a thought, right? But it's been reinforced. So usually looking at it once won't make it disappear. Sometimes you can look at things once and make them disappear because they're so light. Once you see it, you go, ah, and it's gone. You know, like, oh, I can't believe I fell for that one. But something like, I'm the most insignificant person on the planet, that's a deep-rooted belief that every single person has. There's not a single person that doesn't unless they've already healed it, right? And then they know exactly what it is because they've been through it. Okay, so anybody who says, I don't have that, they just haven't seen it yet. It's there. So every time it shows up, your wisdom, you need to be wise enough to say, this isn't about this or this or this or this. This jealousy right now is about how insignificant I believe I am. And then you just realize that's the problem. And it's going to be real hard to yell at Jacqueline. You know, if that's, I don't know what you do, I don't know if you yell, but it's going to be real hard to yell at Jacqueline and try and control Jacqueline when you're being real honest that this is about me. You know, it's because it's no longer, it's really not about her, and you'll see that. You'll say, this is about me, this is about how insignificant I feel.
I think I pretty much go through what she's talking about, right? I mean, I always say it's about me. I think it's just going to take a, you know.
It's a matter of really seeing it. One of the worst things about spiritual study is that we learn it at an intellectual level and we learn how to say it. I know it's this, I know it's this, but we haven't really seen it for ourselves. When you see it for yourself, it's the exact same words, but it's a completely different situation. It changes everything. It changes everything to see for yourself, oh my God, it's true. This belief is in me. Oh my God, it's true. I've been doing this, you know. So, you know, one thing that I really caution people about when it comes to spiritual study is be careful about, you know, you see it so much on Facebook, you see it so much now that self-inquiry is so popular. You see people throwing self-inquiry around like it's candy, you know. But you can also tell that some people have never, ever, ever really realized what self-inquiry is about because they're debating it and they're fighting it. And anyone who understands self-inquiry can't fight. Because who fights? I mean, if you really understand it, you can't even get to the debate. So you certainly could not debate, who am I, with someone. You can't even get to a debate because it stops dead in its tracks. Real self-inquiry stops the false self dead in its tracks. You can't act on it. You can't speak from it because it dies when you practice self-inquiry. It may come again. It may not be a permanent death. But you can't act on it because when you look at it with true self-inquiry and you see that it's not you, it dies. So, let's see what we were talking about when we started this. Something was in here that we need to turn back to. So,
Fix your eyes and your thoughts on the true desire of your heart, not because it is your hope for the future, but because it is your reality now. You are what your heart tells you that you are, only you do not see it because you do not focus yourself there. So what we were talking about was you experience a split heart instead of a split mind, which, you know, that's fine. I have no issue with that. I totally get that. But if your heart is split, there's still a right side of your heart, okay? Right. So what this is saying is focus on the right side of your heart, right? Focus on the part of your heart. And Tom, this I've seen in you, it's the clearest thing in the world. Focus on the part of your heart that is pure. Okay, that's the most obvious thing about you, Tom, is purity. All right, so focus on that. You know, spend your time with the purity. The more time you spend with the purity, the less you're going to want the side of your heart that isn't pure. We literally, like I said, we're saying we lose interest in it. We don't understand that we are desiring what's on that impure side. And by impure, I just mean not true. We're desiring that. And the more you focus on it, the more you desire it. It's almost like an unconscious desire. But if you consciously focus on the right side of the heart, then you start wanting that. And then when this side of the heart starts to show up someday, when this little jealous Tom jumps out with that little idea underneath, you know, I'm the most insignificant thing in the world, you're going to look at it and you're going to go, I don't even want to go there. It's just going to happen. You're like, I don't even have... someone once told me, Ken Wapnick said this, I don't know if it's true, but I totally believe it because I have the same experience. Someone told me that Ken Wapnick said that I don't know if it was he doesn't judge anymore or he doesn't hate anymore. It was one of the two. They're about the same. I'll say judge. He doesn't judge anymore because he doesn't have the energy. And you do. You just get, because it's easier to rest. It's easier to be at peace. It's easier to be your natural self. And at some point, as you focus more and more on the right side of your heart, and you become more and more and more attached to it, more identified with it, more, you know, whatever, this side doesn't have the same attraction anymore, and the same stuff will show up, and you're like, I just don't want to go there. Danielle and Jasmine, they haven't done it lately, so I guess finally they've gotten to know me. But for years, they would do something. Danielle could do anything, and then she'd look at me and she'd say, are you going to get mad? Jasmine would too. She'd do something and look at me. Are you going to get mad? And literally, my answer was, I don't have the energy to get mad. I just, you know, I have no interest in going there. The interest is lost. The desire is lost. If we're getting mad, it's because we still desire that. If we're getting, you know, if we're getting worried, we still desire worry. If we're getting jealous, we still desire jealous. If we're getting fearful, we still desire fear for some reason. I can't tell you what that reason is. I mean, I could intellectually tell you. I can't really tell you. But I know that that's what's happening. The desire is meeting up with the I thought, and that's what's causing it to happen. And again, you have two choices. You can let go of the I thought, or you can let go of the desire. And the best way to let go of the desire is to focus on a new desire. Right? Focus on a new desire and let it increase, increase, increase until everything else fades in interest. This is the song you sent to me, Dave. Strangely Dim. And that song, Strangely Dim, Francesca Battistelli, what a good name, Francesca Battistelli, sings about when she's focused on God, everything else gets strangely dim. She loses interest in it. It's unimportant. And if it's unimportant, you're not giving it your attention. It's not riling you up. It doesn't have that power anymore. It only has that power as long as you're still attracted to it. So, let's finish these two paragraphs. Focus on the world and you will believe the world. Believe the world and you choose to keep the veil which hides your truth. Focus on your heart in all your thoughts, and you choose against the veil. You choose instead that the veil will be lifted, that you may see your truth and your brother's truth, and know in the joy of your heart that it is true. So again, focus on your love of God. Whatever it was that Sri Chimnoy said that's going to come out sometime in October as a quote for the day from Awakening Together. When that comes, you know, focus on that one. So now we need an assignment, and to me the assignment's pretty dang obvious. I would say the assignment this week, and it'll be interesting to see how you all share with me that you did this. The assignment this week is going to be to focus on the right side of your heart, focus on your true desire, focus on your love of God, focus on your willingness, whatever. Because those are all different words that are trying to say the same thing. And some words buzz more for some people than others. So whichever words will buzz for you, spend this week doing that. In whatever way. You can be reading inspirational material. You can be meditating. You can be contemplating. You can be walking and looking at nature, if that is a God focus for you, not if it's a forget God focus, right? But spend, I'm going to say, if you guys will give me permission to say this, spend more time with God this week than you usually do. All right? So if you spend an hour a day now, at least an hour and 15 minutes. Spend more time, literally put time into it. Spend more time with God this week than you usually do. And then let's see what you have to tell me next week. Why are you laughing?
It should be interesting.
Every one of us have time to spend more time. Do you agree with that? Is there anybody here that does it 24 hours a day and can't add another minute?
I'm laughing because I think it would have a significant impact. And yeah. I think there'll be some very interesting stories.
Okay. And I'll do it with you. I give you my
I'm
commitment.
Not saying more. I'm saying personal record.
Yeah.
Best.
Right, best better than your own personal record. That's what I'm asking for. You don't have to beat each other. This is not a competition. I'm not going to say who here spent the most time with God. No, your own personal best. Do better than your own personal best this week, and let's see what happens. Okay, me too. That sounds good. All right, I'm going to stop the recorder then. And then, of course, whenever we stop the recorder, we go into a few moments of silence, and then we'll have discussion. Okay.